Hi, my name is Con Koutsikas and this is A Cuppa with a Conversationalist, an entertaining, educational and informative program with a broad array of guests with unique perspectives and experiences. And for more information about my coaching and workshops, visit my website at www.conkoutsikas.com. Welcome to another episode of A Cuppa with a Conversationalist. My name is Con and I am the Conversationalist and I have my latte in tow. My guest this morning is Sally Carruthers. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you going?
Really well. Do you have a beverage there with you or not?
Well, I'm not a tea or coffee, so I've just got water.
Oh, that's okay. We'll forgive you. That's okay. Sally is a professional home organizer and declutter coach. And her passion is helping busy women and overwhelmed families declutter and organize their homes so they can focus on enjoying life and what really matters.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Sally, I noticed in your intro here, you've also mentioned that you were in the Air Force.
Yes. Yep.
So tell us a little bit about that before we get into the declutter.
So I was in the RAF for 5.5 years or so. I was an air surveillance operator. So basically, fancy way of saying I looked at radar screens for a while. It sounds fun, but it was a pretty boring job, although I did get a deployment out of it. So that was pretty cool as well.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think surveillance officer sounds boring, staring at a screen.
Well, the job sounds fun. But physically doing it wasn't all that entertaining.
Okay, we'll move on from that. Sally, let's get right into it. There's a plethora of shows on at the moment, decluttering, and there's one, my favourite, is Hoarders on SBS, which is horrifying. These people have clearly got some deep psychological issues. Now, Where do you sit in the scheme of things?
So hoarding is actually the top of the scale, obviously. There's a lot of background that needs to be worked that, and it's not just someone coming in decluttering. In those situations, actually, would be fairly detrimental if the background work's not done. So you need counsellors, you need psychologists working with those people. Because there's trauma and there's mental health issues. So obviously I don't work with hoarders. You need a special skill set. I work with everyday people like you and I that just are a bit overwhelmed. Life's kind of gotten on top of them and I help them hit reset and kind of just clear away the clutter so they can just live without the stress and the overwhelm.
Okay. That leads me to my next question. Obviously the cluttering aspect of things, is it fair to say that it's a gradual thing that happens? It's not something a bit like Pantene, won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
Yes, exactly.
And so the emotions that are attached to that, they're obviously building up as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And what sort of things are you seeing there?
Look, for the most part, it's just busy people. So they're so busy outside of the home that they get home, they just dump their stuff down and I'll deal with it later. And it's just that, the procrastination and it just piles and piles and then the stress levels just keep going as well. But, sometimes there's things like, a death in the family. So whether it's a parent or it's a partner and then they don't really want to deal with the stuff at the time. And then it's, a while later, they're like, look, we just need to keep moving forward and stop getting stuck in the past. It could be a number of things, but it's usually just that gradual build up. And most of the time people aren't actually attached to the stuff. It's just the thought of having to go through it is so overwhelming. Okay. They just can't do it. And that's why I've started my business because, when it's your stuff, it's really hard to deal with, but it's not my stuff.
And there's no emotion.
There's no emotion. And even family members coming in to help them, they've got that kind of attachment. So you kind of just need that little bit of a separation to be able to work through it, I guess.
Yeah. What I found interesting is obviously your experience in the military or in the Air Force. Military, there's quite strong regimes in terms of
structures,
structures and processes and things like that. And you also mentioned when you were in your 20s, you didn't use this word, but I gather you're a bit of a slob. So like certainly like I was, I had my mum clean up after me at 20. So you've gone from that environment. So you're a messy person.
Yeah.
You go into the military where it's not, hey, you know, we'd like you to tidy up your room. It's you will tidy up. Mm-hmm. So then going out into the real world and actually go into that line of work. Now, I guess my question is, I would imagine there'd be a fair bit of pushback, like, geez, they made me do it for 5 years. Now I can go back into the real world and I can go, ah, here we go.
Yes and no. Like I've always, when I was that kind of, I was a hot mess. Like I lived with my parents and I moved out on my own and I just went, whatever, it doesn't matter. And then like I remember, it just was messy and I wasn't coping real well. And then I did go, you know, into the defence where it is very structured. But I kind of saw the benefits of it. Like to the level that, you know, when I was at recruits, it was next level. Like you had to have a 30-centimetre fold on your bed and you had to have your pens and your rulers in a certain direction. Like it was next level.
Wow.
So I'm not that level.
Yeah.
But you can see the benefits of having a place and a home for everything, because when you have a home for something, you're going to put it away. And I could have just gone back to that, you know, whatever, but, you know, I became a mum and you need those routines and you need that kind of systems in place, because your head is so full of stuff that you don't have the mental capacity to deal with the physical things around you and everything else that's going on. So I find the benefits of just having that system, having that routine, having those homes. Because when you don't do those, that's when you kind of get overwhelmed and stressed.
There's a great video which I've seen on social media. It's done the rounds for many, many years now. And it's an American admiral, and he's speaking to a group of people. I don't know who they are. And he says, one of the best things that you can do to teach your kids and self-esteem is to make your bed first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. I never used to make my bed in the morning. Yeah. It was like my attitude, well, I'm going to sleep in again tonight.
What's the point?
Yeah. Who cares? But then I get where he's coming from. In your work, other than just the bed, I would imagine there'd be some self-esteem challenges and certainly some self-esteem benefits looking at, my house is livable. It's tidy.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it may be an unfair kind of statement, but women tend to get a lot of the, you know, if the house is messy, they get a lot of the flack about it, because they're like, well, you know, you're the mum, you're the one staying at home, why isn't the house cleaned? And I find that, I don't know. People tend to, if you've got those little things that you can do on a regular basis, like making your bed and having a clear kitchen, like dining room table, just the small things. I always talk about like the low-hanging fruit. So do the small things regularly over and over again, and then you're able to build your decluttering muscles. because you need those kind of things that you do automatically, and then you see the benefits, and then it's just that kind of roll-on effect.
Perpetual thing. I get that, and it's right. It's the little things that we do, and I love the way you termed your declutter muscle.
Yes.
Because pretty much everything we do, it's use it or lose it.
Yep.
And if we're getting into good habits on the little things on a regular basis, that just propels us and there's this desire to keep going. When you go into somebody's home, what sort of stuff are you finding that is the major obstacle? Is it clothing? Is it, you know, books that they don't want to get rid of, magazines, kids' toys, or what is it?
It depends on the person I'm working with.
Sure.
Generally, people that have kids, the number one thing is artwork and paperwork. So kids love to bring home stuff and then you're like, oh, my God, what do I do with this precious masterwork? But I've got 60,000 of them. So, yeah, it's the paperwork for a lot of people. Families, it's obviously the transition for kids. So the kids are going to be transitioning from, like, toddlers and babies into young kids, into teenagers. And if you don't, on a regular basis, clear through the toys they're not playing with or clear through the clothes that don't fit or have a system, you know, some people are like, I want more kids. Then what do I do with that stuff? Do you store it? You know, how do you, like, it's that kind of, if they haven't cleared it to the next stage, then it just keeps adding. Clothes is also another one. Mm. Obviously, women tend to love their clothes. You always hear the stat that's like, I think we only wear like 20% of our wardrobe. And it's amazing every time I walk into someone's wardrobe, the amount of tags that are still left on clothing.
That's sad.
And there's a psychological thing that if you have a tag on something, you have to get rid of it, because if you don't get rid of the tag, you're like, oh, that's too good, I won't wear it today, so you'll leave it back in the cupboard. So that's one trick. Take the tags off as soon as you buy something, because if you put it in your cupboard with the tag still on it, you're not going to wear it.
Wow. Well, there's something I never, ever knew.
Yeah.
So to my partner, did you hear that?
God. Get the tags off it, please.
My sister is a classic for that.
Yep.
Had clothes in the wardrobe for years and the tag was on it. And you're right, she never wore them.
Because you're like, oh, it's new, I won't wear it today, you know, I'll do it next time.
And I guess with stuff, whether it's clothing, whether it's kids' toys and things like that, there's avenues to get rid of it, isn't there?
Yeah. I find actually when I first really started kind of decluttering and moving things out of my home, it was not so much that I didn't know, I wanted to let go of it, but I just didn't know where to take it. And South Australians in particular are very eco-conscious. Mm. So we want things to go to somewhere that's going to be used. We don't want to put it straight into landfill.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things like you can now do clothing recycling. So if you've got a piece of clothing that's not good enough for donation, you can now have it recycled. They can either turn it back into new fabric if they can, okay, or they use it for insulation, for road bases, like shoes can get actually turned into, like, you know, the bases that they put in playgrounds.
Yeah.
They cut the shoes up. The spongy ones.
Yeah.
So shoes can now, old shoes, like the old sneakers, can now be recycled.
Mm.
So definitely lots of different avenues. You just kind of got to look.
I know there's emotional attachments to things, and I look around me and I'm definitely hanging on to stuff that the adage, I think they say, if you haven't worn it or used it in 12 months, it's highly unlikely you're ever gonna use it or wear it.
Yeah.
I look at things and I don't have too much, but there's things, and the mindset is, I'm not going to get rid of it just in case, or I'm not going to get rid of it because there might be an emotional attachment to it, or things like that. Now, I know we spoke right at the beginning about, you know, the hoarders being up here and the really deep psychological issues that they're dealing with. But even at your level, I would imagine there would still be some, I won't say psychological issues, let's call them some stories that they're telling themselves as to why they can't or shouldn't get rid of things. So how do you approach that kind of thing when you know, when you say to somebody, look, you know, this is what you got to do, and they go, oh no, I can't get rid of that, no, that, you know, my auntie gave that to me, or no, I'll definitely use that again.
So I call it sticky clutter. So it's the clutter that you're like, just you can't quite let go of. So there's two different kind of things you're looking at. The first one is obviously the emotional attachment, and it's if it's been given to you by someone.
Mm.
And it's okay to keep sentimental clutter as long as it's to a level that's maintainable. If you've got, you know, I've got an example where I had someone that had jewellery from an ex-husband, and she's like, it was expensive, I don't want to just get rid of it, like, but I don't want it. It's causing me all sorts of, you know, I'm guilty about letting it, wanting to let go. It's caused me sadness and anger because I just don't like that person and it was bad memories, but I got to keep it. Like, well, why? Why are you keeping something that's only causing you negative and horrible sentimental emotions?
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of figure, is it good emotions or is it bad emotions? Mm. If it's bad emotions, just get rid of it. Like, just let it go. It's weighing you down.
Mm.
If it's good emotions, then is it something you're actually going to be using? So I've been given a tea set from my grandmother. I don't drink tea or coffee. Like, for me, it's good memories from her, but I'm not going to hang on to it because it's kind of I would much rather rehome it and give it to someone that is actually going to use it and it's going to benefit from it than it's just going to sit in a cupboard.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the main thing. You got to just, you know, make, is it good, positive memories or is it bad? And if you're going to use it or not. And then in terms of the just in case, I call it just in case, just for when. So just for when is I'm actually going to use this, like the candles under my sink that I'm going to use when we have blackouts, because we actually have blackouts a lot.
Sure.
Just for when, I am going to use that. Just in case, yeah, is it me just kind of going, oh, the aspirational me, I will use that one day because I'm going to be amazing skiing, even though I don't ski. I'm going to keep those skis and I live in South Australia. Like, you know, there's that kind of, that was a, you know, big example, but you kind of got to figure out, am I actually going to use this or is this just me going one day, maybe in the near future?
Mm.
And I put expirations on something. So if a client is a bit unsure, we put it in a box, we put a big date on it and say, you know, December 2021. And if in a year's time we pull it out and there's a big date on it, you don't even have to open the box. You can go, yep, that just needs to go straight to donation or whatever it is. Expirations are a really, really good thing. What's something else can I say? That it's gone.
While you were thinking about that, one thing that I found quite interesting, when you spoke about, hypothetically, you know, your auntie having given you that tea set.
Yeah.
We get gifts from loved ones and close friends and family, and we look at them and we go, like you, you're not a tea drinker. The likelihood of you using it is none and Buckley's. There's some guilt, I would imagine, in giving it away, and not only guilt, but then Auntie Mary comes along and says, oh, let's have a cup of tea, Sally, and you go, oops, that's kind of awkward. How do you broach that? How do you deal with that?
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's hard. There are some people, you know, you talk about like love languages and their love languages, they love giving you stuff. Yeah. And that's okay. But we have to remember that it's our home. And as hard as it is, if it's stressing us out and it's causing us major anxiety or, if it's just causing problems, then you've got to remember it's my home. The gift was given, the actual gift is the process of giving.
Not the actual gift.
It's not actual thing. You are going to be giving things that don't work for you and it's okay to let them go. You do need to give yourself permission and say, that item is not representing Auntie whoever, or it's not, you know, your best friend or whoever it is. It's okay to let that go. It is difficult. You will come across some people where they'll be like, I gave you that painting or that tea set and where is it? And I'm like, well, maybe you have to have that conversation and say, look, I'm really sorry. It was beautiful. It didn't work for me, but I gave it to someone that really appreciated it.
That really appreciates it, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. They want you to use it, and you would hope that most people in your life are going to be accepting of the fact that, you know.
Hope.
You hope, because not everyone, you know, everyone's different, and some people do, you know, I'm fairly minimal in my lifestyle and not everyone around me is the same, and that's okay. Like, you can't force people to do things the way you want, and they're not always going to see your point of view. But end of the day, it's your home.
It's exactly, absolutely, it's your place. For me, not that I was I had clutter, because I'm a bit of a minimalist as well. I don't like stuff on tables and
it stresses me out.
It just,
yeah.
So, but you accumulate you know, whether it's cooking utensils, whether it's a whole heap of stuff. And I found one of the most gratifying exercises for me was when I sold my home and downsized.
Yeah.
There was nowhere to put the stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's got to go. It's got to go. And whilst the actual process of moving, you know, they say it's one of the most stressful things you would go through in your life, it's kind of one of the most liberating things as well. Do you find that?
For some people. Yeah. For some people it's not. Right. So you've automatically gone, yes, I'm going to a smaller space. I have to get rid of stuff. Some people don't. You got to look at it as you got to work to your space. Like you said, there's nowhere to put it. Therefore, I have to let something go. Not everyone's brain works that way. They have a bit more attachment, and they it takes them longer to kind of process through the things.
Mm.
And you kind of, it's harder for some people, but you kind of like, you know, I've got a cupboard behind me. That's the size of the cupboard. Mm. That's all I've got. I don't want it sitting all over the floor because, you know, I need it to go away.
Mm.
It's a good time to do it, but it's also a very stressful time. So sometimes when people move into the new place, they kind of crammed a 4-bedroom home into a 1-bedroom
unit.
It happens because you're like, I need all this stuff. And then you get there and you realize, and then it's that, oh crap, I'm overwhelmed. What do I do?
Yeah. Kids stuff is a really interesting one. And again, from my experience when the kids were little many, many moons ago, but I look at my son and my daughter-in-law now and my beautiful grandchildren. And when Leo came along, the first grandchild, and from both sides of the family, obviously it's sport rotten and, you know, grandparents are buying just the most. I looked at them and go, you got to be kidding me. Like the kids won. And it got to the stage where they had all these, like cars, for example, you know, cars that they sit on and push. He was never going to use them. He was never going to use them.
Yeah.
And I look at it and go, why would you not, like, it's great that you want to give to the kid, but like, I understand there's an element of fun, but some practicality. But where am I going with all of this is, as a parent, okay, clothing and toys, you have the first child and you know that you're going to have more children. Mm-hmm. Where do you draw the line in terms of what you keep and what you don't, knowing, I mean, nowadays, obviously, it's quite prevalent to find out what the sex of your child is.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes it easier. But where do you go, he's had that, that's enough, next, or whatever. Where do you, what do you suggest to people? And from a storage perspective as well.
That's probably one of the key points is, you know, if you've got a small house and you have limited storage, there's only so much you're going to be able to keep. You know, I would be keeping the things that are really practical, that were very useful, the items, especially clothing. Like I found with a lot of my clients, they've kept clothing for another child, and 4 years down the track or whatever it is, the elastic's gone on them. So they have to get rid of them anyway. And instead of donating them at the time, they've kept them, which is fine. But you kind of got to look a little bit further in advance and go, okay, realistically, does, you know, the next child need 40 onesies? Because, you know, you do get given a lot and it's not until you take it out and look at it and you realise, oh, geez, like, you know, onesies, they do go through a lot, but you kind of, it once again, it's hard. You got to kind of think, how much storage have I got? How much am I wanting to keep for that child? And what items did my current child or children like?
Mm.
So like you said, with those big things that you like practically, they're just not going to use, don't hang on to them. Mm. And you do have to sometimes have a conversation with family members and say, look, I'm dealing with a lot right now. It really helps me to have less in my home because it means I've got more time with the kids. I always like talk about what is your why? So why do you want less stuff in your home? Why do you want the clutter? Why do you want, you know, a clutter-free home?
Mm.
You know, I went through this process and I went, well, I want a clutter-free home because I don't want to be a stressed-out mum yelling at my kid all the time because they won't help clean up the house. Mm. Like, you know, not clean up the house. Not slave over here. Clean up their bedroom, you know, clean up their toys. Well, if you know, there's studies showing that kids play better with less toys, you know, and families love giving. My daughter's the first grandchild on both sides, so we've gotten the toys. Yeah. And I have had to give suggestions and go, hey, thank you for all the gifts. This year for her birthday, she would really love, you know, whatever it is. And don't, you know, narrow them down because they're never going to follow things 100%. Yeah. But give them really, really solid suggestions and give them experiences rather than toys. Or if they do need clothes, ask the grandparents for that and say, like, my mother-in-law, she often buys my daughter shoes because she's like, that's something really practical that I can give, and I know that you guys are going to need that. So, yeah, it's...
That's a really great suggestion. In fact, my daughter-in-law, Caitlin, if you're listening, and why aren't you listening, is I actually ask her now, what do the children want or need? And I don't know what the other grandparents do, but it's so refreshing to get a list and go, because for me, giving gifts is quite, is actually, I find it stressful.
Yes.
Not because I don't want to spend the money, but because I'm worried about what I buy. Will they like it? Is it practical? Are they going to use it? So when I get a list it says, you know, da-da-da from Big W or da-da-da from wherever, I'm going, how good's this? So I know where to go, I know what to get, and I know it's going to be, A, appreciated, and B, it's going to be used.
And, you know, to further that, in my own phone and with my partner, we have lists with gift ideas. So each year, throughout the year, we kind of go, oh, she really loves that, or I would really love this as a present for myself. So that when it comes to your birthday, someone goes, oh, what do you want? And you're like, here's a list. You pick whatever you want. If you don't want to, that's fine, but at least I've given you some ideas. And you've collated it throughout the year. Mm. So it's not stressful when it gets to Christmas or your birthday. You're like, I have about 12 things on my list. There you go. Thank you. If you get it, great. If not, that's fine.
If you don't.
Yeah, it's just giving the option and suggestion. So if they do want something off the list, it makes life so much easier.
Yeah, yeah. With an interesting one is also for me is photos. Yeah. And years ago, again, this is, as my children say, Dad, when dinosaurs roamed the earth, you know, when I was around,
yeah,
God bless the little buggers, it was all photos.
Yeah.
We're in the digital age now, so we take more photos.
Yeah.
Because there's obviously not that cost attached. But I look at some of them that I take and I go, God, that's a beautiful photo of me and Leo, or, you know, me and Edie, or, you know, me and whoever, you know, my partner. But where do you put them all? And some people still, particularly, they still get photos given as gifts. That becomes that for me. That's a real tough one. Like getting rid of or putting things like that away. How do you deal with that? What's your advice there?
I struggled with that for a while. There actually are like photo specific organizers out there that will help you go through, which is I think is a really good one, because photos are extremely overwhelming in terms of just the sheer number. So most people, when you look at their phones, they've got capacity for like 20,000 photos. What? Like, that's insane. I, at home for me, we've actually got one of those little digital photo frames.
Yep.
I find that really, really good because then it flicks through and my daughter sees it and she thinks it's wonderful. We like that. That's a really good option because it has multiple photos and it's always shuffling through. In terms of physical photos, you kind of have to do something with them. I live in a bushfire-prone area, the process of getting all of my childhood photos onto the computer is actually a really good option because if something does happen to the house, I don't have to be stressed. Yes, I would be upset if I lost the physical copy of it, but I still have a copy digitally. So that's, something you need to consider with the physical ones. You don't also have to, like, some of the photos from your childhood, like, it's just a random blurry photo of, like, I don't know, excursion to Canberra, you know, Parliament House. You've got this. You don't need to keep those photos. Like, keep the good ones. Oh. Don't feel like you have to keep an aquarium photo that is of a fish. Okay, cool. Take the photo of you and your best mate when you're at the aquarium.
Mm.
You know, you can really seriously cull down. And that's the goes for digitally as well. Most people will take 16 photos of someone blowing out a candle. Pick the best one.
Yeah. Isn't it funny? You give somebody your phone and go, can you take a photo of me or us or whatever? And they hand it back to you. And they've taken five.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay. I get why, though, because you can, sure, I get that. You talk about getting rid of photos. Yeah. There's a lovely photo. May my mother rest in peace. When I was little, I had very, very curly hair, and my mother of ethnic origin used to dress me in what would not be male associated attire at this point. Okay. And there's a wonderful photo of me wearing these frilly yellow underpants with almost like a little dress, and it's got a duck on it. And delightful. And my brothers and sisters have a lot of fun pulling that one out and showing that to my kids. Wow. What I love, Sally, what I really, really love is that digital photo frame, not only from a practical perspective, but as a great gift idea. I'm telling you, you have no idea how much you have saved my bacon, right, for an event that's coming up in July. You have no idea.
The digital photo frames on their own are a bit harder to find these days, but you've got a lot of the, you know, Alexas and Googles and whatever, they have the ones inbuilt. So you just have to do a little bit of research, find the ones, but they are available they are, technology, it's good. Mm. You just got to use it, you know.
Crazy.
Yep.
Sally, I've got so much value, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. Just before we go, give us Sally's top four tips on either maintaining or decluttering.
Okay. One of the big ones is creating homes for your items. We touched on that before. It is really, it's really, really beneficial. So you need to kind of, when you walk in the back door, do you have a place for your handbag? Do you have a place for your keys? I have a little hook. You know, you just put it up and then you don't go searching for lost items because you know exactly where those items are, you know, where they need to go back to. So creating homes is really important. Stop looking at things that, like, you have to, like decluttering is a negative thing. Make it a positive thing. Mm. Keep the things that actually benefit your life, that add value and that you enjoy using. Don't just keep thinking, oh, I've got to get rid of this. I don't want to let go, like all this negative crap. Go, okay, this item, I love it. I use it. I want it. It adds value. You know, keep looking at the positive side of things. What else? Start small. Start with that low-hanging fruit and build momentum. Get those decluttering muscles big and strong by doing small things. So small things could be your makeup, your bathroom, bedside tables, those small little things just keep adding up. And then once you've got more confidence in your decisions, you're going to be able to tackle big things. Don't go and do Marie Kondo and pull your entire wardrobe out unless you are actually able to finish it, because if you don't finish it, there's no point.
Mm.
I guess that's probably the last one, is make sure that you finish through to completion.
Yep.
So complete. If you have decluttered, take those items, put them on the front seat of your car, because if you put them in the boot, you'll forget about them.
Yep.
So you put them in the front seat of the car, and then on your way to picking up the kids or on your way to a meeting, take them and drop them off and finish it, because if you finish it to 80%, it's just going to keep coming back in and keep decluttering. That could be another one. I'm really sorry.
They're fantastic. Have you got another one to share? Yeah. Go on. Yeah. Oh, look, Sally's really got a big smile on her face.
This is a good one, because you can declutter the hell out of your home, but if you haven't decluttered the clutter stream, so how it's entering back into your home, things are just going to get worse. So I call it like a sinking ship. So you're going down a stream, you've got all this stuff like in your boat, and the water just keeps coming in, and you can't, as much as you pail it out, as much as you get rid of the clutter, it's just going to keep coming in because you haven't plugged the holes. So where's it coming from? Is it coming from your shopping habits? Is it coming from the kids' school with all the
grandparents.
Stuff? Grandparents. You've got to figure out where it's coming from and you need to stop it or at least slow it.
Slow it down, yeah. Awesome. Sally, it's been fantastic chatting with you this morning, and I know that our audience will get tremendous value out of all the tips and advice that you've given us and sharing your story. Folks, my name is Con. I am the conversationalist, and this morning I've been chatting with Sally Carruthers. Thanks very much for your time, Sally.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of A Cuppa with a Conversationalist. To join in next time, follow or subscribe. And for more information about my coaching and workshops, visit my website at www.conkoutsikas.com.